RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Dusty. How's it going?
Man, I'm doing well. Mike, how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I can't complain. Good. So here we are to record another episode of RPG Lessons Learned. So for those of you listening at home, if you've never listened before, this is the podcast where we talk about our games so that you can learn from our experiences. Today, I'm pumped, guys. I'm excited. We are talking about the very best game that we played in or took part in at Mace 2017.
Yes.
Far and away.
Awesome game. Good time was had by all. I think in contrast to our previous episode, there will be glowing feedback.
Glowing reviews, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad we're coming off the last. So we kind of sandwiched last episode between a lot of positivity because my first game went really well. Yep. Terror on the Cotaro. And then our Cthulhu game did not go well. And then this game was the best game at Con. And gosh, I it was awesome to play in a game by a GM who was so far and above my experience and my ability that I feel like I walked away learning a whole lot. So we played in the Sanctuary of Sumohu, which is a game run by Mace's celebrity GM, DM Scotty. DM Scotty from the YouTube channel, The DM's Craft. So that link will be in the show notes, or just search YouTube for The DM's Craft. DM Scotty's been doing amazing crafting videos where his whole shtick is, you know, crafting amazing looking dungeons on the cheap. Lots of cardboard, lots of flat black spray paint, lots of, you know, really just cheap materials that he pulls together into really amazing looking dungeons. And this was the guy running this adventure. So we're going to talk about it today. However, we're all going to be really careful to give away no spoilers about the plot of the adventure.
You mean I can't tell about the end where everybody decided that they wanted to?
No. It was our plan all along.
Yes. The butler did it. The butler did it. No, in all seriousness, we are not going to give away any spoilers because it's our understanding from comments that he made that DM Scotty runs this adventure at various cons. I get the impression that he had run it quite a bit before and was probably planning to run it again. So if you get a chance to play in this game, oh my God, do it. And we are going to do our level best not to ruin your experience with any sort of spoilers whatsoever, except to say, my God, the terrain was beautiful, mm-hmm. which is no spoiler. That's what you expect from DM Scotty.
Yeah, the superior craftsmanship and everything that he presented at the table. You know, it was professional grade craftsmanship, and I would say professional grade DMing.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. But I'll be honest with you. I think that where DM Scotty's at, I think the scope of what he does way more than Dusty does. But I think when it comes to the creativity, I think Dusty is up there. I think, sorry not to kiss your butt.
I appreciate that sentiment, but I can't reasonably accept it.
Man, I don't know. I don't know.
I would, so not to get ahead of the questions, but I would almost say some of that may be attributed to the type of game that DM Scotty was running compared to the type of game that Dusty normally runs, right? So, again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it was a very simple system with a pretty linear dungeon.
I mean, there's some choices.
I'm going to jump ahead for a second.
Okay.
Because I can.
Yeah, yep. Sure.
Because I have a microphone in front of my face and I can talk. I love the simplicity of his game.
Yep.
It was masterful in its simplicity.
And I think that's what a con game should be.
Absolutely.
I don't think we should take that away, Brian, as being representative of DM Scotty's entire gaming, what's the word I'm looking for?
Repertoire. You know, even if it was, who cares? It was phenomenal.
It was amazing.
Yes.
But I don't want to take away that DM Scotty runs linear games, because I bet his games at his home table are just as complex and nuanced as anyone's home game could be. But let me start off with a question that's not on our show notes, guys. When I think about business and I think about value stream mapping, you always ask, would the customer pay for this? You look at a step in a process and you say, okay, would the customer, you know, pay to have you do this step? Would you guys have paid money to be in this game? Like, if DM Scotty was at Mace next year, and he said, hey, $20 ahead to play in my game,
so
would you pay it?
I will answer that with a reference back to our original Mace overall recap episode. If it weren't for DM Scotty's game, I would probably not go back to Mace 2018. So I will give that a yes.
I go back to we did pay for it, even though he didn't pocket the money.
If it were just that game, I put it this way, if I stream mapping, I would pay to be in that game.
If he had a Patreon.
Yes.
He does have a Patreon.
He does have a Patreon, which I probably should
have. If he had a Patreon and I was paying to play in his game, I would back his Patreon.
Fair enough. So if I stream mapping, the game was good enough that we would have paid for it.
Yes.
And Brian, to your point, yes, in a way we did. But we would pay directly for it. So that's the mark of a really good game.
I'll clarify that even further. If Mace 2018 came around and there was the standard entrance fee and then an additional fee on top of that entrance fee to play in DM Scotty's game, yes, I would play that pay that additional fee to play in DM Scotty's game.
And that'd be the only game you'd play in?
Probably.
All right. So we've broken the questions down, and we're talking about the system that he ran, the amazing props that he deployed, how combat went, and then a little bit being very careful not to spoil about the adventure itself. So, again, we'll do system, props, combat, and then the adventure. So let's start with the system. So DM Scotty ran the Pocket Fantasy RPG, which is available for free. The creator, Brandon, I'm going to mess up his last name, Goringer? Brandon Goringer puts it out for free. And that link will be in the show notes to his Google Plus community. But Pocket Fantasy RPG, it's a free rules light RPG that he put out. DM Scotty chose to run his game in that system. What do we think about that system, guys? Was it hard? We had never played it. We really hadn't even reviewed it before the game. Was it hard to learn at the table?
No.
Breezy. His brief 5-minute description of how the system works before the game was plenty thorough enough to thoroughly understand how the system worked.
And it's basically a single D6 system, and there are times when you roll 2d6, and you could roll your d6 twice, but DM Scotty said, hey, everyone get out 2d6, and we all had it. And just a real simple game, d6 based, 2d6 at most.
Yep.
And I don't think we had any situations where we would have needed to roll more than 2d6.
Nope. There were no situations for rules lawyering. There was a very simple play. There was no real question of whose turn it was to do what. Initiative just went clockwise, counterclockwise around the table. Super simple system.
Yep.
I missed fourth edition, to be honest with you.
I would almost say it was probably the perfect system to use at a con.
At a con. I would not want to play this every single game. I would hate myself.
Really? No. You wouldn't play this in a campaign?
Not a long-term campaign.
Yeah, but for a one-shot, even outside of a con, a one-shot, you'd be fine.
How many games are we talking about?
A one-shot.
Yeah, I would do it a one. Yes.
Where one equals one.
I think about our games when we play, and then, oh, somebody's got to go home.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so I guess we've done some one-shots that lasted more than one session. But one adventure.
One
adventure, regardless of the number of sessions.
I could do it.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
But for a con game?
It's fine for a con game.
Yeah. I might run a game in this in con next year.
What I like about con, though, and hey, this is exactly what happened, is I like trying new systems. Like, I would want to try something different next time. But, I mean, if it was his game, or if it was something that I just want to play because it's going to be fun. But, yeah, I really like Pathfinder, I'll be honest with you.
You like crunchy systems.
I like crunchy systems.
To your point, I wouldn't want to run a campaign in that system because it doesn't have enough breadth. It doesn't have enough depth. It's neither deep nor wide.
You say that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to... I have since gotten interested in the system,
yeah,
and I fully downloaded it from DraftThruRPG. There's a ton of magic items.
Is it scalable? Does it grow as the players grow?
I can't remember the leveling rules, but okay. There's a fair amount there, man. There's a lot to that game, to that pretty simple game. Let's talk about, I mean, so did it feel right? Mike, did you were a wizard. Did it feel like you were a wizard?
So I would have to say that's kind of where it fell down for me a little bit and why I wouldn't want to play it in an extended campaign. So it was simple, but it was also generic. So basically I was a ranged archetype kind of character where I basically had a free ranged attack. Maybe not magic. I did have a good list of spells that I could choose from that gave me some good wizard flavor. But once I kind of exhausted those spells for the encounter for the day, that was pretty much the end of I'm a wizard.
How's that different from any other wizard in D&D or Pathfinder? When you exhaust, I mean, let's talk about BFRPG. You're level one wizard, you have one spell, you use it, you're done, now you poke things with a dagger. Same thing.
None of it was predicated on any kind of stats or ability. There was nothing about
the spell. There's nothing about your attributes,
right?
Creating a saving throw DC or a spell attack bonus,
right? So I guess I'll say that a con game like this, especially this game, it's like going to an Indian restaurant for the first time and getting a plate of something.
Yeah.
And then assuming that you understand the breadth of Indian cuisine.
And you don't.
And you don't.
Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah.
So, long story short, you don't think your wizard felt like a wizard?
Yeah.
Okay. Brian, did your fighter feel like a fighter?
How do you not feel like a fighter? Like, going back to that level 20, was it? Yeah, it was a level 20 game that we did. Was it, or 12? With the Avengers.
Avengers was 12, and then the Demon Hunter game was 20.
Like, yeah, I mean, my character definitely was not as complex as that level 12 fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But
you were well armored and good at hitting things with a sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my rogue definitely, I mean, Mike, my rogue felt like a rogue.
Yeah.
The sneaking around, the backstabby stuff, the, you know, two dice when I attack in these situations, it felt very roguelike to me. Mm. So mixed reviews on the fantasy feel of Pocket Fantasy RPG. We've already kind of answered these two questions. Would we play it again, and would we play it in a campaign? So would we play it again in a one-shot, maybe, is what I'm hearing from you two.
Yep.
See, I would totally play it again. I would run it again. And then would you play it in a campaign? I think the answer from Brian is a definite no.
Probably not.
Mike?
I would lean towards probably not. I would have to try it out, and if I didn't see that there was some growth or some expansion in there, then I would switch to a no.
I would have to understand it more to make that claim. I don't want to just... It's like the first time I had sushi. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I would try it again. Now it's my favorite food, so...
Are you hungry?
Yes. I am.
All right, serious question. Let's say one of you was having a friend coming in from out of town, and you wanted to introduce them to RPGs. And I said, well, D&D's a little complicated. Why don't we run Pocket Fantasy RPG? Would you say, yes, that is a good sample of what RPGs are like? Or would you say, no, I really want this person to get the flavor of D20?
I would say yes, if... that campaign had a lot of RP opportunities to it. I think it would be great in that first experience if it focused more on discovering character and character progression.
I would really want them to get bogged down in the mechanics. So
I would want them to get bored enough at the table that they just start stacking dice. That's what I want to happen.
Yeah, that's my concern with D20 stuff. Like when we had your friend, or Liz's friend, Ryan.
Yeah.
And we introduced him to 4th edition. I don't know, he had a great time.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And I love 4th edition. I don't know if he had a great time.
No, I don't think he did.
And 4th edition, let me be clear, brought a lot of people into the hobby.
Yeah.
Because it was so approachable after years of it was just very approachable. It was written to be approachable. And I still don't know if he had a good time.
And we tried to make that game as easy start tutorial open as possible. So we had pre-made characters and simple adventure.
But yeah. If it had been Pocket Fantasy, I think he might have had more fun.
I would agree.
All right. Let's move on and talk about the props. So DM Scotty is known for the props. And I should be clear to those of you listening at home. Most of DM Scotty's stuff, if you look at his YouTube channel, most of it's gridless. Some of it, I think in the early days, has kind of a nod to the grid. But most of it is gridless. How did you guys feel about the props? Did they add to the game?
Yes,
absolutely.
So expand on that.
They added to the game, but I went in. I mean, they were great. Don't get me wrong. I'm nitpicking because that's what I do.
Sure. Yeah. And we wouldn't have much of a podcast if we were like, yeah, everything was great. We loved it.
See you next time.
I went in expecting to be completely blown away, and I was pretty blown away. But it's like walking onto a movie set. You can actually see that, oh, this castle is a painted backdrop. You can see that this sword is, you know, something that somebody fabricated, and it's not like a real sword.
Well, I mean, he didn't have a holodeck available. That's true.
What I'm saying is that I could see like the Dollar Tree in a lot of the stuff.
Okay, you could tell. You could look at it. It was made.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. It added a lot for me. Like to me, as he went room by room, he used the same floor room by room.
Yeah.
A lot of the rooms had some of the same features like columns and whatnot, but he switched out enough in every room that every room felt like a new room to me. And how are we going to approach this room? Like, to me, the props added a lot.
It's more like a TV show, less like a movie, in the sense the resolution is lower, but it's richer because there's more of it, I guess.
Sure.
I like to think about
it. Bear in mind, too, that he wasn't at home. He had traveled.
Yeah.
He had flown on a plane, presumably, and brought as much as he could with him to give us a reasonably rich experience. And it was a very rich experience to be a traveling experience.
I would completely agree with that. I also think that the props added a lot to the game. Partially we were there because of his acumen with the props, with what he does, you know, for a living in the public sphere, and to kind of be a part of that and to see his craft in person. That alone added enough to the game that I was very satisfied.
Could that game that we played, without giving away spoilers, have been run without those props?
No, because of a puzzle.
Yeah, no.
Okay, yeah, no. I'm not saying anymore.
Because the props were so integral to the story.
Yes.
I mean, these props were clearly custom to... This was not a generic set of tiles.
No.
This was a set of props specifically for this adventure.
It could have been.
That specificity is what I was so impressed by. I mean, Brian, that one of the motifs was just carried through room after room
but
after room.
But that also... That could also be done in text.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be as good.
It would be like, I'm going to bold this specific part in the text, because if I don't bold this in,
it's like playing
and draw
it's
out
like,
to you.
It's like playing a 3D video game, like where you have something that you're looking for and there's a shining bright light coming down on it.
Which is what makes the props required.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Mike. I don't think that game could have been run without those props. And what I love about the M. Scotty's stuff, and what I could never, and frankly will never replicate, is that specificity. I have a box full of dungeon tiles that are generic. I have a whole stack of maps from Arknight that are generic. I will probably never deploy settings that are specific to an adventure that I wrote, aside from the Kataro, which I built and we talked about, you know, two episodes ago.
Yep.
With very rare exception will I do that. And DM Scotty, I mean, I bet if you play at his table, every session you're seeing stuff that's specific to this adventure that he wrote and these ideas that he came up with.
Yeah.
And you can't get that with generic stuff that you buy.
No, I agree. I would say it's probably a very good guarantee that every single game, his props are integral to the storyline.
Do we want to sorry, Brian, what?
I was going to say, I think we're making a lot of assumptions. But I tend to agree with him.
I've watched a lot of his channel.
I haven't.
Yeah, I have. I've watched it. I mean, he puts a lot out there, man. He makes a lot.
He was awesome. I'm not taking anything away.
I feel like you're defending me. Like, I'm trying to compliment DM Scotty, and I feel like you're trying to defend me.
No,
my feelings.
That was 15 minutes ago.
Okay, good.
I haven't thought about that since.
Good.
I guess. More so, like, the props were nice. They were great. But what I loved far and away the most was his style of DMing. Like, the sound effects he would make, when a question came up, how he would adjudicate stuff. His just general attitude was what made the game for me.
That is also a great point. I think a lot of that I also took away from, and I'm not trying to kiss his ass, but this is totally going to sound like I'm kissing his ass. He is genuinely a good-natured, interactive, he's a guy who's going to give you all of his energy and all of his attention.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that a lot of that is what made that come through and what made it such a great experience.
Yeah.
So, Brian, you've talked about the fact that you've been a podcast personality for a long time, and you meet people at Con, and they feel like they know you.
Yeah.
I feel like I know him. Like, when he walked in the room, I don't know if you guys noticed, I waved at him as if he was a friend of mine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He walked in and I threw my hand up like, hey, and I was like, oh no.
You don't know
he
me.
He doesn't know me.
But
my daughter and I have watched so much of his channel that I completely geeked out over DM Scotty.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Yeah.
And he's a super personable guy. So I'm making a huge assumption, but I would assume he probably gets that pretty much everywhere he goes.
All right, let's finish out the last question about the props. Would we rethink the minis or props in our own game because of what we saw, what he was able to do with specific props specific to his game? Do we want to rethink? I've taken a very props light approach aside from con game stuff, and I've definitely, as far as minis and maps, I phoned it in and I use stuff that I've bought. Would you want me to rethink that?
I think it's a time constraint, honestly. I think if you got to the point where you could make gaming props and be profitable and have that be your primary revenue generator instead of job.
Yeah, working. Which, to be clear, is not my goal.
No, but I mean,
I like having a career.
If that were an option, absolutely. But I think in the reality of time and availability.
Yeah, well, so we're okay playing the way we play. Yeah.
He did more terrain props than I would actually want to play on a regular basis. Like, I don't need terrain props. I'm fine with a map.
I could see that.
They were great for line of sight, though. So dig into that for me, Brian. What do you mean by you wouldn't want so many terrain props?
I feel that they're awkward, especially when you're talking about walking on terrain. I like a grid that is a grid that is a grid. So if I need to worry about how many steps...
That's what bothered you, is how far could my mini go?
Yes, I like the precision of a grid. And that goes away.
He didn't use it with us. He has a whole gridless measuring stick way to approach things. And even back in original D&D, they listed movement of characters in inches.
Yeah.
Because of a tabletop play. And there was no concept of a grid. It was just like, you know, hey.
Break out the ruler.
And whatever you have, you know, there were rules for moving around corners and all that. It was very much like H.G. Wells' Little Wars.
Also, though...
I say H.G. Wells. Did I mean Orson? No, I mean H.G. H.G. Wells. Sorry. Keep going.
Now I want to follow this H.G. Wells thing.
he wrote in Of Dice and Men, they talk about Little Wars, which is a game system that H.G. Wells wrote as an opposing force to Blitzkrieg, which required a lot of purchasing and minis and a tabletop.
Now,
Little Wars was a game that H.G. Wells wrote that you could play with literally any set of toy soldiers.
Now, later on, did Orson Welles DM a game in that?
Crap. Now, am I saying Orson or am I saying H.G.?
And is there a recording of that?
H.G. Wells.
Did it scare a lot of people? No, so like with the terrain, like when it comes to navigating my character across the terrain, if he's going to stop, or she's going to stop at a certain point, I don't want the mini to have to tip over.
The terrain being kind of rounded off, like the hills and stuff, that bothers you.
Yeah, it does. It really does. I have a problem.
No, that's fair. I mean, so we do a grid, and you're fine with that. And I'm going to keep doing it because I've bought a lot of stuff. Let's talk about combat. So no spoilers. We only had two fights, really. Were they fun? Were the fights fun?
I'm going to say the fights weren't as fun as the puzzles.
Yeah.
The fights were okay. The fights were generic. There wasn't anything spectacular in the fights. I'm just going to reiterate that the puzzles were more fun than the fights.
I'm surprised that you would say that.
Yeah.
Because of, all right, I had a great time with both fights. The first fight, I got to do some really roguey stuff. I got a couple of backstabs in that I was super proud of.
You got a taste.
I got a taste of why Chris is always the rogue. I got to get in some roguey stuff thanks to Pocket Fantasy RPG, and I had a great time with the first fight. With the second fight, I didn't get in as much, but Mike, I don't know if you... Do you remember how you short-circuited that last fight?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So I'm surprised that you're not like, man, that was super awesome and super fun.
For me, that was more of a puzzle than a fight. I didn't really do anything spectacular in the fight system. I basically had that gimme spell that I could do whatever I wanted, like once a day, and I absolutely used that to short circuit the fight because the puzzle was, I don't want to say obvious, but for me it felt obvious.
It was and pretty obvious.
Felt like he had a moment where he was like, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
I watched his face, and when you did that, you were sitting right next to me. You were to my right, just as you are right now.
Yeah.
And when you dictated the action that you took, I immediately whipped around to look at him to see how he would react, because I was like, man, as a GM, I would like tense up. I knew that I would like tense up and be like, oh no,
he just short-circuited
my just fell apart. But I saw him have a moment where he was like, and it wasn't like he didn't tense up the way I would.
Yeah,
he just had a thoughtful moment and he was like, yep, that happens.
Yeah.
So great willingness to let the spell do what the spell did and let what happened on his part.
Yeah.
But I had a good time in the fights, and I think that really falls more on Pocket Fantasy RPG than it does on his GMing style.
I can see that. Yeah. I mean, for the system itself, the fighting was fun. It was very fluid. It was very fast. It felt like it had consequences. It's a good fighting system. I think I was just more concentrated on the puzzles than the combat.
So I guess what you're saying is the combat was fun.
Yeah.
But it was just outshadowed by the puzzles.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. Let's finish up on some of the adventure stuff. And we've touched on a lot of this already, right? So I'm gonna breeze through this. So we talked about puzzles. The puzzles were for all of us, the central part of the game.
Yeah. The puzzles were very reminiscent of a 16-bit shooter.
Yes.
In a good way?
In a good way.
Okay, in a good way. I was going to say. I couldn't tell if you meant in a good way.
It was like a Sega Genesis game.
I could see that. Yeah.
But a really good Sega Genesis game that you would talk about years later, like Phantasy Star 4. Like that amazing...
I don't talk about Phantasy Star 4 years
later. Okay, well...
That's one of the Dusty's games.
Other than it was $100 when it came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like that really great, deep game.
Like Revenge of Shinobi.
Or Link to the Past. I was going to say Link to the Past.
Yeah, yeah.
Reminded me of Link to the Past.
There was definitely some Zelda-esque elements. Yeah.
So puzzles are central part of the game. Props are central to it. And they were a lot of fun.
They were. I think what was also cool about this game is I think us as a group, as a table, which by the way, we hadn't talked about this, but we had a great group at the table.
We did.
He had a huge group. He was running 8 people.
Yeah, which was monstrous. But I think
and went by quickly too.
It did. He that system was the right call.
It was. I think we as a group threw him a lot of curveballs he didn't expect.
We did. We didn't mean to.
Yeah, but I think just with the group of people we had at the table and there was a lot of openness of thought was that we took a lot of left turns that I think probably short-circuited more things than he expected. I think we avoided probably 3 or 4 combat encounters by the way we solved some puzzles.
Yeah, that's fair. And we did end up, like, I don't know if you guys remember, we finished up super early.
Yep.
And we walked out of there and was like, whoa. That was the most fun I've had playing RPGs in a long time.
Yep.
And I can't believe it was only however many hours it was.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half, maybe? 2 hours?
No, it was a little over 2 hours of a 4-hour session.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, we got to the end and we did what we did and gosh, it was fun. I had a great time.
I did too.
Story. Last set of questions around the adventure. Was there enough story?
No. Yes, there was. It was minimal, and it got out of the way.
Yeah.
So you needed the story to get out of the way?
No.
You wanted the story to get out of the way?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
I didn't need it, but it did, and I was good with that.
Okay, so you were happy that it got out of the way.
The story was just something in place to link the encounters and stuff together.
The story was enough to shepherd you through the adventure.
There's not more that I can say without spoiling things.
Yep.
But to me, the story had as much depth as it needed to.
Yeah.
To support. Well, you know what? We've talked on the show before about how we kind of, none of us, dungeon crawls don't make sense to us.
Yep.
Like just a pure dungeon crawl just doesn't make sense because, hey, there's a crazy dungeon. Okay. Why should I go there? I can make just as much money catching bandits in the forest. Why should I go into this underground trap filled dungeon?
Yeah.
That just sounds dangerous.
Yep.
But, To have fun at a con and to do a dungeon crawl game, there was more than enough story to justify this dungeon crawl.
Yep. I never felt an urge to do exactly what you just said. I never felt an urge to question why I was there, why I was participating.
Oh, and it's clear. I mean, he has the props for that dungeon.
Yeah.
None of us were going to be like, nope.
No.
Screw this. I go to the tavern and drink all day.
No.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the fact that the system made it easy for him not. We're using a different system. I probably would feel differently, but it was just a nice, quick jaunt through a dungeon. And I'm having a hard time
It sounds like you want the depth of a home game at con.
No.
Okay.
No. I appreciate the fact that the system, his props, and the adventure story work so well together to create this elegant and simple fun adventure. It was really well balanced overall, where the game that we talked about last week was not balanced at all.
That's true. Anything? So what can we learn from DM Scotty? What have we learned from DM Scotty?
Energy is important. I would almost say
you touched on that, and I had stuff to say that I forgot to say. But sorry, finish your thought.
No, his energy and his involvement as a DM and the way he just worked with the players at his table just accented, complimented everything he did. His props were great, but I would say his energy as a DM was greater than his props.
I feel like he had fun.
Yes.
Like, and a lot of times when I GM, for me, the fun is after the fact. Like, it's performance anxiety before. During, it's just trying to get everything right. And then afterwards, depending on how I think the players felt, I'm like, okay, yeah, that was fun. Or, oh no, that was terrible. But I don't really feel the fun in the moment. Even Terror on the Kataro that I ran at Mace that went over, I think, as well as it could have. It went over great. I could do better. I could learn from it, but it went over great. Even that, I don't know how much fun I had during. For me, the fun was when the session was over and I was like, that went really well. And that's when I decided that I had fun for the last couple of hours.
You're such a robot. I love it.
But DM Scotty, I mean, you could just, as a player, you could watch him having fun as a GM. That's a takeaway for me. I don't know if I have as much fun in the moment.
At the same time, though, I question, was he having fun or was it just a performance?
Cynic.
Yeah, the cynic. Regardless of the truth of that statement, Brian, it made us feel welcome and it made it enhanced our experience.
Absolutely.
And think about the burden a celebrity has of, you know, in meeting people. And if that celebrity, if he had been cutting us annoyed looks,
we would have been like, man, DM Scotty, he's such a prima donna at the table.
Yeah.
I'm unsubscribing from his YouTube channel.
But Brian, I feel like it was genuine. And whether that's because it was or because he's that good a performer, doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's moot. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
So, yeah, I think we have one real takeaway. The one takeaway is, GMing should be fun, and I forget that. How has that not come up in any of these shows? What show number are we on? This is show number
34, 35?
This is show 34. This is episode 34, and I've never talked about the fact that GMing should be fun.
Oops.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, a lot of times it's not. It's not until after the fact.
That's fair.
When we play in our normal game, I go home, and depending on how the session went, Susan's like, did you have fun?
And you're like, hold on, let me get out my spreadsheet.
No, I feel like if you guys had fun, then I'll say, yeah, it was great. Or if you guys didn't have fun, I'll be like, no, I crashed and burned. But I don't know that until after the performance is over, until after the session is over. I mean, when you look at me and we're actually playing, do I look like I'm having fun, or do I look like I'm thinking? For me, I'm trying to be three moves ahead. I'm trying to think about what the monsters are doing. I'm trying to take your input and change the adventure because of it. I'm really trying to enable your fun. And I don't know how much fun I'm having until afterwards. Having said that, I'm still addicted to playing.
You know, that's...
But I don't feel the fun in the moment. Do I look like I do?
That's something I'm going to take into account for our next game, because I feel like you're having fun. There's boisterous moments where we're laughing and joking.
That's true, yeah.
We go on tangents and talk about crazy things and then come back into the game. But, next time we play, I'm just going to stop and be like, Dusty, are you having fun?
I've got to think about it in the moment, too. Because you're right. When Nathan cracks a joke, and Nathan's great for cracking the really clever joke that none of us would think of, but it's obvious and it's clever, that mark of really good comic timing. And it's like, yeah, we all crack up, and I'm like, dude, you get inspiration for that. Or, dude, if that were in character, you would get inspiration for that.
Yeah.
I definitely have fun in those moments. You're right. I've got to think about that. But, hey, great takeaway. GMing should be fun.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you for listening. RPGLessonsLearned.com, RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, we're on Google Plus. Just look for RPGLLPodcast@gmail.com. And hey, email us. Question about the show, question for us, email us. We are proud to be part of the RFC family of shows, so please visit tfradio.net and take a look around, especially if you have any interest in the wonderful world of Transformers.
Yes,
where Brian is well versed and deeply entrenched.
Sadly,
not sadly. Everyone has a hobby. All right, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives.
We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.